HSBC has appointed Mark Tucker, the current chief executive of Asian insurer AIA, as its group chairman. Mr. Tucker will take over on the 1st of October, succeeding Douglas Flint, who's been in the role since 2010.
Senator Tom Cotton delivering a message to House Republicans, warning on ABC's This Week.
Do not walk the plank and vote for a bill that cannot pass the Senate and then have to face the consequences of that vote.
While the GOP bill to repeal and replace Obamacare cleared two key House committees, Cotton is convinced it won't pass the Senate and will put the Republican majority in the House at risk.
We thought we were in the clear from winter, but a fierce nor'easter is taking shape that could set records for the biggest snowfall in the month of March. The Midwest facing below freezing temps and heavy snowfall. Blizzard watches from New York City to Boston. Winds 40 to 50 miles an hour. Blizzard conditions in some spots and more than a foot of snow possible in others.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday. Today is March the 13th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business week. Hopefully you set your clocks ahead an hour. We don't have to remind you about that, but it is worth noting that it really is kind of 4:11 in the morning now, so congratulations, you made it to daylight saving time again. Glad to have you with us. Lots of snow out there. Mary Vandeveld's going to have the very latest in traffic coming up. We'll begin there with the weather this morning to let you know at least 400 flights have been canceled at O'Hare. Up to 5 inches or more of snow coming. The latest from the WGN Chicago Weather Center throughout the morning. Going to get you to work safe and sound. Get you prepared if you're smart like a true Chicagoan. You never put away any of your winter gear, even though it was almost 80. You're all ready to go, hopefully, this morning. Let's begin, too, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures now weaker, off by about a point. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat, too. Could be a lower opening on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Around the globe, an event-packed week. We'll see stocks generally mixed today. The dollar's recovering from a three-day fall as investors now are bracing for a likely, very likely interest rate here in the United States later this week, and now 100% likelihood that there will be a rate hike later this week. Strong U.S. employment data and talk that the European Central Bank policymakers had also started thinking about raising interest rates now make it a pretty done deal. The latest voting is in the 90% area of a likely vote increase to do up the short-term interest rates later this week. European shares, or Asian shares, hit a high note today after that strong jobs report as well. Asian markets fell about 10% in January from the month before. Core orders, including excluding ships and orders for utilities, fell about 3%. There was a really negative manufacturing index report in Japan as well that could be driving the markets there. But the Nikkei is going to end the day up in positive territory. All of the Asian markets are up as well. This morning, oil is trading up about a couple of cents at $48.39 a barrel. Are you team real milk or are you team almond milk? Milk sales in the U.S. have been declining. That could be one of the reasons. But there's also a lot of other good things happening in the dairy industry. So we thought we would spotlight today Joe Oberweis, the CEO at Oberweis Dairy in the Chicago area. And Joe is with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Joe, welcome to The Opening Bell. Good to have you in.
Thanks very much.
It's very rare that we get to talk to a CEO of something that I really, really love, which is dairy products and ice cream. Tell us about the Oberweis family and the company that you now lead.
Sure. So we are in our roughly 90th year of making the best milk and ice cream we possibly can. I'm the fourth generation to run the business. Started in 1915. My great-grandfather was a dairy farmer in Aurora, Illinois, and he started selling off extra milk. And at that time, it was a very, very different world. And so that process was literally going around with a milk can and, you know, ladling 2 pints or 3 pints of milk, and you know, people would have ice blocks from the Fox River having been frozen. And so, in 1927, became a little bit more of a entity with pasteurization and starting to develop with the industry. My grandfather in the early 1950s opened the first Oberweis ice cream store, also in Aurora. And, you know, the business stayed as a small home delivery business with the one store for the next 35 years or so when my dad purchased it. And his background was in aggressive growth stocks, and so he wanted to see it start growing more aggressively. And that's when we started opening more stores and building our home delivery business. Today we've got our home delivery business, which has homes in all the Midwest and also the Virginia Beach area, and we're about to enter into Richmond, Virginia, and Raleigh, North Carolina next month. And then we've also got obviously our ice cream stores, mostly in Illinois, but also in Michigan and Missouri. And sell our milk through grocery stores, which has sort of an exciting change that's imminent here in the next week or two, where we're switching that business to all amber glass bottles to protect the taste of milk.
We'll talk about the amber glass bottles things. That's a very cool idea, but I want to talk more about the history. You mentioned that some things have changed, the pasteurization, obviously.
Yeah, but that's a big one.
Has the philosophy really of your company changed in all those years?
You know, certainly not in my lifetime, and I think the answer is no. I mean, you know, we've really always been around producing the best tasting products we can. I mean, we literally started making ice cream, you know, so from say 1927 until the early 50s, we were a milk company, and we literally started making ice cream because my grandma Laura loved ice cream, and my grandpa Joe, who I'm named after, said, well, I can make better ice cream than anything you can buy. And that's the story behind why Oberweis started making ice cream.
And it's still really true today. I think I would challenge anybody to say that it doesn't taste better than anything else you could get out there. But maybe I'm a little biased on that.
Because I'm biased. You're totally neutral.
I'm a fan of the company and of the product. So that's going to be my next question. And I'm kind of old enough to remember when dairy delivery was a thing,
yeah.
But your company's still doing it. So as much as things have changed, they've stayed the same.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I was just mentioning a moment ago. We are we're growing that part of our business. We are starting deliveries next month in Richmond, Virginia, and Raleigh, North Carolina, which is sort of a testament to some. You know, it's something that folks want, and you see it not just in our industry. You see home delivery type services on a broader scale coming, you know, left and right. Everybody's trying to figure out how to make the home delivery business work. It's just something we've always done. It's been just a fundamental part of our business for the entire history of the company.
Does the product taste different delivered in home delivery? Back in the day, we had the glass bottles that came in the little containers. It's sort of the same today, right?
Yeah. So it's a great question. It certainly doesn't taste much different between buying it from an Oberweis store and buying our milk from through home delivery. We identified, and this is a little bit of what you were sort of alluding to a moment ago with the amber bottle. We identified a couple years ago that there was actually a taste difference. And it wasn't something that, you know, we weren't having customers pounding down the door saying, what's wrong with this? It's literally a situation where the family identified, hey, this isn't tasting the way that it should. And, you know, we tried all sorts of different methods to fix it. And we ultimately figured out that the one and only across-the-board permanent robust solution is to start putting our milk that goes to grocery stores in an amber glass bottle. So once that's implemented, the answer is no. I think it'll taste exactly the same.
The amber bottle thing's interesting because anybody who drinks beer knows that that's why the beer bottles are brown.
Yeah.
So obviously it works with milk too. How did you come to figure this out?
Well, it's not new information. It's more of a question of, you know, we've always known that light is an issue. We didn't realize how significant of an issue that it became and the prevalence of the problem, and quite frankly that it simply was ambient light. You know, typically in our world we were worried about sunlight, but as more of our business was through grocery stores, we identified that just the ambient light and the display lighting matters. Well, then you're saying sort of, you know, what do you do? Well, we tried all sorts of different solutions. You know, we've always known that the amber-colored glass bottle is a solution. Companies tried it years ago. In fact, after we announced that we were doing this, a friend of mine said, oh, I can remember when Borden's used to put milk in amber glass bottles. It was news to me. So we know that decades ago it was tried, but it wasn't as important at that point because most consumers, as you were mentioning before, got their milk delivered to their homes, so it just wasn't a problem. So it's become a bigger problem as milk goes through grocery stores.
Let's talk a little bit about how the philosophy, more in depth about the philosophy. Sure. In this day and age where people seem to be becoming more concerned about where their food is sourced, yeah. where their products are sourced, talk about how that has been woven into your company.
It's great for us, right? I mean, we're a small local company. We buy our milk from small herd family farms. I mean, these are people that and I'm not exaggerating. They literally know every single cow by name. And they have all sorts of information that they know just by spending time with the animals and understanding sort of what's happening with them. The best milk comes from unstressed cows. It really matters. It makes a big difference. People joke sometimes, happy cows give great milk. It's totally true. I mean, it really, the less stressed a cow is, the better the milk tastes. And so, as trends have become sort of closer to the farm, that's what we are. I mean, in sort of one of those situations, we're fortunate because the trend sort of came to us rather than, you know, us trying to chase a trend.
Do the cows in Illinois fare better than cows in California? And again, I'm thinking of this. You've seen the commercial, right, where
sure.
the happy cows in California, they're no different, are they? Or are they?
You know, I have to confess, I don't know a lot about California cows. What I can tell you is they certainly fare a lot better in Illinois and Wisconsin than they do in Florida or Georgia because, the heat gets to them and things like that.
What is it from your background growing up and going through school that has prepared you for this moment being CEO of Overbice?
Yeah, so I started running the company about 10 years ago, and we, from the time I was probably about 10 years old, I can remember figuring that, hey, that's my future. That's what I want to do. You're just around the business. I spent summers cleaning the dairy store in Aurora all the time. I went to the University of Illinois for undergrad, and then I went to Northwestern's Kellogg School for grad school. And it's, when you think about, to be honest, nothing ever really prepares you to run a company. You don't know what it's like until you start doing it. And it's, it can be great and exhausting all at the same time.
You mentioned your grandfather.
Yep.
How much of him rubbed off on you?
So that's a great question, but I was very young when he died. I was 4 years old when he died. And so most of what I know about, and I'm the youngest of five kids, so my oldest sister's 12 years older than me. So all of my siblings knew him significantly better than I did. So most of what I know about him were things that I heard, but certainly his commitment in the business to quality. And, this is a guy who would work all day, come home and have dinner, and then he would go back to work in the ice cream store because he literally felt that he had to be there to make sure that every product was perfect.
Are people consuming as much dairy as they used to, or what are the trends in that area?
Yeah, dairy, yes. Fluid milk, no. I mean, there's been sort of a 50-year decline in fluid milk sales, and it's something that you see across the board. We've been pretty lucky to see our milk sales grow, but you do see other, kind of the high-end portion of the milk and fluid milk industry growing. Yogurt has been out of control and growth. I mean, it's been something that has been phenomenal for the industry. But generally, people are consuming a lot more fluid milk, a lot more yogurt, and they're consuming less fluid milk overall.
Ripped from the headlines recently, this controversy over almond milk, all of these other different kinds of milk. There's been a push really to have them separated in grocery stores.
Yeah.
Are you at the forefront of that too?
Actually, I am. I was just at an industry conference, and it is frustrating to be in an industry where if we put certain things in our legitimate milk, we can't call it milk anymore. But they can take an almond and press it and call it almond milk. So I think it's confusing to consumers, not all consumers, but, people think that, I'm going to drink almond milk because it's got all this protein. It doesn't. It's got way less protein than real milk. And so it is, in particular, an industry where, starting with sort of salt of the earth, people who are producers and farmers, and, we're putting these big headwinds. I don't see the reason for it. The reason that it's called almond milk is to try to steal market from the dairy industry. And it's not milk. So, yes, I'm absolutely strongly in favor of changing it so that the The labels are different.
I was never, I never realized how much water it takes to raise almonds. And I guess that was highlighted recently by the California drought and the problems they were having out there. It seems like it's a waste of, you know, energy almost.
You're asking the wrong guy. I'm in the dairy industry. That's outside the dairy industry. So I don't know. I don't know much about pressing almonds.
Let me hit you with something you do know. What's your favorite flavor of ice cream?
You know, we were talking about that before. It's so funny because it's hard for me to pick one. If I had to pick one, I'd probably say strawberry. But I will tell you, I love our vanilla ice cream. If I'm ever wanting to remind myself how good our ice cream is, I'd go to vanilla.
When it's cold outside, do you see a big drop in customers? And are you happy summer's coming?
You know, we look at it the other way. I'm always happy summer's coming. Yeah. But we look at it the other way. You know, our store managers right now are already gearing up. They're hiring people, training them. You know, we go through a cycle because we hire a lot of high school kids. So they'll be coming on board now, learning how to make products, and so if they're ready for the summer. Absolutely. Our summers are significantly busier, and quite frankly, they're a lot more fun than January. January is, you know, kind of recover from the holidays.
What would you say are the biggest challenges facing your company? Are you happy with maybe the possibility some regulations may be going away? Are you happy that, you know, maybe there's something better coming in terms of those regulations?
Yeah, so you know, time will tell what's going to happen with regulation, right? I mean, I don't... Talk is cheap, so, you know, of course, it would be great if there is some deregulation. You know, the dairy industry, the way that we pay farmers is regulated in just a really, really crazy way that was developed in the 1930s. And to be honest, if there was some possibility of making significant changes there, we would be all for it, so that'd be great. I just don't know what's going to come. So, you know, from a regulation standpoint, we'll see. Time will tell. You know, in terms of challenges for us, I think we face a lot of the same challenges that other companies face, which is how do you find the right people, the best people you possibly can, train them, invest in them, and keep them happy, which is, you know, I think that's a problem any CEO of any company is thinking about day in and day out.
Is there a way to get more people to drink more milk?
Well, you make sure it tastes great, right? So, I mean, and that's really a very, very honest answer. I think that some of what's happened is that milk doesn't taste as good as it used to. And so if you drink Oberweis milk, you know, we have focused on taste from what's happening at the farm all the way through our process and you know, the packaging change that we were talking about a moment ago where grocery stores are going to have amber glass bottles was, you know, it's all designed to make sure that when you're at home pouring your kids a glass of milk that it tastes the way that milk tasted in the 1950s. It's important.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about some of the other products, but butter is one of those, too, that seems to be making a resurgence as we learn more about the chemicals and other things that go into some of those other products.
Sure.
Talk to me a little bit about that. Can you taste the difference, first of all?
Between what? Between
butter and product, whatever, margarine or whatever?
Yeah. Yes, I love butter. I'll confess. It makes everything taste better. You know, my wife and I and kids have chickens in our backyard, and so we make scrambled eggs. They're so much better when you just throw real butter in a bunch of it. And so, yeah, there's no question. I mean, butter tastes great. And, you know, there's a lot of research saying that the fat that comes from dairy is – maybe not so bad. And what's really interesting is you're asking before about trends in milk. We are seeing a massive shift of whole milk being growing, leaps and bounds, which is very different. You know, it used to be you only gave your kids whole milk for a couple of years, and then you switched to 2% or fat-free. And we're seeing fat-free milk decline relative to whole, and whole has taken off like a rocket.
So when we have our CEOs come in for these interviews, we always like to talk a little bit about the future. Some of companies think about robotics coming in and artificial intelligence. If you had to look 5 or 10 years down the road for Oberweis, what would you see?
We are obviously not in a super high-tech industry. I was at an event last night at UI Labs and just blown away at what's happening in lots of other industries. And all that stuff will certainly seep in. You know, where we see a lot of technology is, frankly, more in marketing analytics. You know, from a production side, everybody wants to try to make a better product, right? But what we find is, the way that we're processing milk and ice cream, for example, it's really hard to beat. And, you know, there's methods of high-pressure pasteurization. There's all these other things that are sort of around the periphery. And there's a company that came out with what they thought was going to be this just killer great new fluid milk product. And the problem is it doesn't taste good. And so when it doesn't taste good, it's really hard to get consumers to buy it. So for us, you know, I think that there's a lot of sticking to the knitting, making the best tasting products we possibly can, and integrating new technology where it's appropriate.
Joe, it's good to meet you, and all the best to you and Oberweis.
Thank you very much for having me.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. U.S. stocks rose Friday after a strong February jobs report. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 45 points to close at 20,902. The NASDAQ Composite added 23. The Standard & Poor's 500 picked up 7.5 points. Despite the good news on jobs, investors are now bracing for several factors that could rattle the markets. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates at its Wednesday meeting. Wall Street also will be keeping an eye on Dutch elections and a potential step by the UK toward exiting the European Union. The price of Bitcoin plunged from record highs Friday after the Securities and Exchange Commission denied a request for the first Bitcoin exchange-traded fund. Creators of the digital currency were hoping for the SEC's blessing to drive more investment in Bitcoin. And JCPenney is testing new home remodeling services at 100 stores in California, Florida, and Texas. That comes on the heels of a disappointing holiday season for Penney's. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 540 February unemployment and employment data published shows the economy added another 235,000 jobs, unemployment rate holding steady at 4.7%. By all accounts, the job market is tight and tightening. Some parts of the country are experiencing shortages of workers, and that makes the competition even that much more fierce, not only for employees, but employers. So instead of maybe offering crazy perks, companies should focus on some other big things, one of them being management, leadership. Our next guest has written a little bit about that. Roberta Matchison is the author of The Magnetic Leader, How Irresistible Leaders Attract Employees, Customers, and Profits. She's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us here today. In the light of the jobs report, this does make your book a whole much better read, if you excuse my grammar there, because this is something that if you're offering a perk, having a great leader is something you say will attract employees.
Absolutely. I mean, I see so many organizations try to compete on perks, and as you know, there's always a bigger boat, and so you know, there's just no way you're going to attract and retain the talent you need, you know, by offering simply free lunches or, you know, beer during or after work. You know, we can see it's just not working.
So what would be the, if you could tell us, what would be the qualities of a magnetic leader?
Well, in my new book, I talk about seven qualities, and I'll share with you two of them. The first being authenticity. I interviewed dozens of magnetic leaders while researching the book, and the common thread that we found was that magnetic leaders are authentic. And by that I mean they show up every day as themselves. You never have to worry which version of your boss is going to be there. And I think that's very powerful, and I think that's very, it makes employees feel a lot more connected because they know who they're really working for. And the second trait is transparency. You know, a lot of times leaders you might know who aren't so magnetic, you know, they never seem to be able to tell you the truth. And people really want to know what's going on, even if it may not be what they want to hear. And so that level of transparency is something that employees find very, very attractive.
So as we mentioned earlier with the jobs numbers, there's probably a lot of people out there who may be shopping for a new job. How do we find out in the interview, and again, this is interviewing your boss, I would suppose, how can an employer or potential employee find out about their employer and whether or not it's a magnetic employer, leader?
Well, I tell my coaching clients to start with going on to Glassdoor. I mean, there's a lot of information on Glassdoor regarding who, you know, people's opinions about their organizations as well as their bosses. I also recommend going onto LinkedIn and seeing who you might know or who you know that knows someone in a company so that you can reach out to them and get a better view of what really is going on in that organization.
And then from the flip side, attracting and keeping employees is a big deal now with employees possibly being able to go anywhere they want with the job market being as it is. How does the magnetic leader keep these good employees once they have them?
Well, that's a really great question because there's really no point in hiring great people if you can't keep them. And I think it comes down to really, you know, something that you probably learned early on in your life, and that's treating people the way that you would like to be treated. And by that I mean, you know, how many times have we worked with people who we find aren't all that respectful? You know, they don't respect our time. They don't think about, gee, maybe he's got something to do this weekend, and so they make very unreasonable demands. And I think when you're managing people, if you take the time to really put yourself in their shoes and ask yourself, you know, well, if it were me, how would I like to be treated and manage that way, I think you'll see your magnetism really, really increase.
You know, in the book, The Magnetic Leader, and it's out this month in March, you talk about several different things, but, the idea that you have to sort of think differently about what it takes to create this, you know, organization that's not only, as you say, profitable and it not only attracts customers, but employees and profits as well. You really have to think differently from the get-go, don't you?
Yes, you really do, because it's a completely different market. I mean, in the old days, which are like maybe 4 years ago, you used to be, as an employer, in control. You could select anyone you wanted. A lot of leaders managed under the premise you'd be lucky if you could get a job with us. And today the tables are turned. And the, you know, candidates, today's employees, they're in the driver's seat. And it's sort of like, well, hey, you guys are really lucky to even have me here for now. And if you want to keep me, you better treat me well.
Are there magnetic leaders in organizations that don't do well, or in your research for this book, do all of the magnetic leaders have, or are they part of organizations that do well?
Well, they are the reasons organizations do well.
So did you find any, what's the struggling part here? Or is there any? I mean, I know there's some organizations may have good leaders, but they don't necessarily pull in great profits, or do they? Or is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that the leaders that I interviewed, and some of them are running or managing in nonprofits as well, what I have found is that there's a direct correlation. I mean, if you think about it, when is the last time you had an interaction with a miserable employee that made you feel like, hey, you know, I want to come back here, I want to do business here again? And so it's really all tied to the employee experience. And what happens in so many organizations is that companies focus on the customer experience and they don't really think much about, well, what's the experience like here for an employee? What's it like to work here?
Yeah, and that goes back to what you said at the beginning. No amount of break rooms or nap pods or ping pong tables can fix that. Roberta, let's talk a little bit about the magnetic leader and how they help employees reach their potential, because that's a big part of this. What have you found in that area?
Well, they really advocate for their people in when it comes to development opportunities. Today's worker, particularly the younger worker, they really want to know that there's a place for them in the organization to move up the ladder. They also want to work for companies that are investing in them, in their ability to grow as leaders. And so, you know, a lot of times I hear when I'm speaking to employees, you know, all I really wanted to do was attend this dinner, you know, where there was a speaker I wanted to hear, and it was going to cost $50, and my boss said no. I mean, like, it doesn't have to cost thousands of dollars to invest in your people. You know, doing something as simple as paying for their annual membership to an association they want to belong to, reimbursing them for dinners, or even if they want to buy a book, letting them put that on your expense account, you know, a book related to their leadership or to their job. I mean, you don't have to go big. You just have to show people that you're there for them and you want to help them grow.
So, Roberta, here's the million-dollar question for you. If there's a leader out there listening who's not magnetic, how do they become magnetic, or is that even possible?
Well, it's definitely possible. The first step is to recognize that you're repelling talent and that you're not magnetic. Because, you know, I have found in my practice, you know, I can't help people who don't want to be helped. So sometimes I'll be brought in by a company to, you know, as an executive coach. And if I can, you know, if I can tell right away that that person is not interested, you know, I can't help them. So the first step, you know, is really saying, hey, I need some help here. And then you get it. You either, you know, look, you can read a book, which is awesome. I encourage people to do that. But, you know, nobody's really ever learned how to ride a bike just reading. So you have to apply those principles as well to whatever you're doing.
Roberta, good read. The book, I think, went out on March 11th, or is it coming out now, this week?
It is coming out tomorrow.
Excellent. Wonderful of you to join us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Roberta Matchison is the author of The Magnetic Leader, How Irresistible Leaders Attract Employees, Customers, and Profits. Again, it comes out tomorrow at bookstores. Look for it. A really, really good read. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow Futures showing a weak opening on Wall Street to flat numbers this morning on the S&P and NASDAQ as well. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning. Oil is trading lower by almost a full percent now at $48.06 a barrel. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Outlook for this Monday, March 13th, 2017. No major economic reports from the government today, but the Congressional Budget Office scoring on the GOP health care bill is expected to come out. Leaders are hoping to see numbers on how many people the new insurance bill might cover, how many people it might kick off the rolls. Baby product injuries report from the study Pediatrics finds that every 8 minutes in the U.S., a child aged 3 or younger is treated in the ER or elsewhere by a doctor for a nursery product-related injury. That report out today. The 61st session of the Commission on the Status of Women takes place at UN headquarters in New York. The UK's House of Commons holds debate on the government's European Union withdrawal bill, which is expected to clear Parliament. Also today in the UK, the Culture, Media and Sports Secretary, Karen Bradley, expected to come up with a final decision on whether 21st Century will be able to buy and merge with Sky, the owner of Sky News and Sky Television, Sky Media. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, March 13th, 2017. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning right here on 720 WGN and in the Steve Cochran Show, which is coming up next. And we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. Until then, I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.